This is a Christian Science extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. The title to this prayer treatment is Transformation, Negative to Positive, Attraction or Rejection. Mary Baker Eddy stated that she has never seen a single student that was able to transform from something better than where they are in terms of their overall life to a new dimension, much forward and higher, without a fight, a battle, continuous battle. Why is that? Debbie Klingbeil, one of our more than 100 authors on the website, did some serious research into this area. She discovered that the human brain has an involuntary, built-in, very deceptive rejection to anything unlike what it believes to be true. Now, what it believes to be true, in most cases, has nothing to do with what is true. And part of the reason is that our largest intelligence agency, and one, if not the largest one in the whole world, has a project called Project Mockingbird. And the purpose of that project is to feed lies to the American public in an attempt to have the American public believe what is false to be true. And they do it through repetition. It's a long-term plan. This project has been in effect for over 60 years. 60 years. Our tax dollars are funding an intelligence agency within our own borders to train us to believe lies to be true. We have the information on our website. And if you use an honest search engine such as startpage.com, you will find that it's not difficult to find information on that project. By the way, that intelligence agency, or should I say unintelligent agency, was begun with Nazis from Germany that were brought over here after World War II. The same Nazis that guided Hitler during World War II. That is the foundation of our largest intelligence agency. Mary Baker Eddy discovered Christian Science in 1866, and she was so thrilled about being healed when three doctors in the home had given her a diagnosis, a prognosis of not living through the night. She asked for her Bible. She opened it by just letting it open of its own will without seeking any particular page. And what she read were the words of Jesus, and they so inspired her that even though she had been bedridden for some period of time, and this was all due to a fall on the ice, she knew she found a real treasure. But she needed to research and explore thoroughly what it was all about. And she gathered her various resources, and the Bible was her primary source. And over a period of the next 10 years, up until 1875, when she felt like she was ready to publish the first edition. She had no idea how many there would be. There ended up being 432 editions. But the very first book, she had commissioned a publishing house after very serious research to find someone that would publish the book, because the book was basically turning upside down what everyone believed to be true about matter versus spirit. So when she finally thought that she had everything understood that would enable her to publish the book, because she basically wanted to prove what she thought was true before she published a book that was explaining it, she commissioned the publisher to publish it. And they had a time schedule. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. Nothing got done. She didn't get any transcripts to read. She didn't get any printed book to review. Nothing. She finally realized, after prayerful thought, that it was missing an extremely important element. How about evil? What part does it play in being able to have a healing on any topic? Well, she found out very quickly, because when she wrote the chapter on animal magnetism, the publisher published the book without even talking to her. And he was going to give her the transcript, and she was going towards where the office of the publisher was to give him this new chapter 5 entitled Animal Magnetism. She later changed the title to Animal Magnetism Unmasked, because you can't really learn anything about evil until you take off the mask. It clearly says in the Bible, I believe it's verse 4 in chapter 2 of Genesis, that there went up a mist. And then it relates the story of Adam and Eve. But chapter 1 comes before that, of course. And in verse 26 and 27, it says that God made man in his image and likeness. That's not exactly right. 26 says, "And so God said, let us make man after our image and likeness." And then 27, it says, "And so God made man in his image and after his likeness." So there had to be an acceptance. It says, let us. We have to open the door to let the truth come in. If we don't do that, we can get nowhere. So is it any wonder why healing cannot come through unless we deal with its opposite? The truth is what brings forth the healing. Its opposite is evil. The scientific statement of being says there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. And we can put anything in there we want to that's unlike God. We could say there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in a broken arm. Or anything at all. Any kind of sin, sickness, disease, or even death. There's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in death. I mean, it sounds obvious when we say it, but Mary Baker Eddy is the only one that penned the words that are entitled the Scientific Statement of Being. The difference about Christian Science and every other religion is exactly what Einstein says about the value of understanding what science is and what true religion is. He says that religion without science is blind, and science without religion is lame. And what he was really saying is that science without an understanding of what God is, who is controlling the entire universe, is like working with your eyes being blindfolded and your hands behind your back, and probably also having your feet tied together. Why is it so difficult to deal with evil? Because evil always wears a mask. It is based on deception, deceit, decoys, lie compounded upon lie. To give you an idea of how tricky it is, the one that was the Speaker of the House of Representatives for many years was giving instruction to her cohorts in how to conduct themselves in order to try to take down an absolutely good person. But they wanted to take an individual down if they were competing with their own group, which were very dishonest. So she would say one way to do it is to fabricate a total lie about the person. Give it to the media and have them publish it. Well, they don't publish it. They have it these days. It's on the internet. Cable channels and the regular media channels, the big names, you know them. And then they have all of the different media say the same identical words. I mean, they give them a script to read. And they do it day after day after day until the people hear it so much that they believe it to be true. And of course, the majority of people are sheep. They're not researchers. They don't check out what's true and false. They hear it and lazily just accept it without doing any research. And the way the news media is set up, they don't need to disclose their source. They can just say a generic term like, this is from a reliable source. So the one making it up fabricates the entire thing, gives it to the media, and then the one that made it up in the beginning can use the media as their authority for stating the lie. They could say, I just heard on the news yesterday that such and such and such and such. And it's all a lie about the individual. Dealing with evil to find the real cause, because of the layers and what was just mentioned about how it operates, is like trying to heal a problem by working on the symptom instead of the root of the cause. Nikola Tesla, one of the most brilliant men about electricity, he's the one that discovered that we have all the electricity that we need in the air around us, within our body, and in the earth beneath us. He built a large tower, and this was back around 1900, and he walked down the street with Thomas Edison holding a light bulb, and it was lit. They were just walking down the street. There were no cables. There was no electrical power plant. There was no solar panels. There was no visible source of the energy that enabled that bulb to be lit. We have a full presentation on effective healing, and there are three additional related pages on how to heal anything. We give you very specific instructions that is in a structured format. The bureaucracy likes to say there is no such thing as a formula. Reject it. What do you think mathematics is based on? What do you think music is based on? Chemistry. Any of the physical sciences are based on formulas. You have the elements. You have operators. You have the algorithm that is applied by the operators to the elements. And you have levels of consciousness. For example, 1 plus 1 equals 2 is a lower level than 3 to the cube of 10. And of course, calculus is certainly a higher level than plain mathematical tables that one memorizes when they're a youth in school. Every science is the same. There has to be a structure, and that structure enables elements, operators, and levels of understanding, and algorithms that bring forth a product. The elements by themselves mean nothing. The operators by themselves mean nothing unless you have the elements. And the level of understanding means nothing unless you have the other two, the elements and the operators, so that you can have an algorithm and come forth with a product. And the highest science that exists is the science that explains how Jesus healed. And that is titled Christian Science. Just as Einstein said, science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. A science is non-existent unless you have a structure and you have a system, and you have laws that have been proven to be true, because you use those laws in order to utilize the system which is applied to the structure. And you have to understand how it all works together. If you don't, you can get nowhere. And part of that is understanding how evil operates in order to be able to apply the truth. Mary Baker Eddy says we need to find the evil that is causing the problem and explain it away with the truth. One of the most brilliant of all practitioners next to Mary Baker Eddy is Frederick L. Rawson. His publications are on our website. He not only discovered how to go back in time and heal, that's right, time travel, but he gave us a book entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, in which he lists 1,315 different ailments and how to heal them by giving us the facts about the evil in a very few words, because he doesn't want to focus on it. He just wants to identify it. And then the opposite that is expressed in spiritual terms, that you can apply to negate the evil. Mary Baker Eddy says the most potent factor in humanity is the ability to reason, because the ability to reason is the tool that enables one to apply the truth that reverses the evil. And if we can know the exact opposite of the evil, which is the truth that will destroy it, then we get right down to the bare facts in the beginning. And we have our formula. On page 146, Mary Baker Eddy says this: divine metaphysics reduced to a system. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form, comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330, she says this. She says there are 32 planks to the platform of the system of divine metaphysics. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. And then from page 330 to 340, she gives us those 32 topics that she calls planks. The complete text. So she's telling us that if we understand those 32 topics, which is the letter, and we understand the spirit, and by understanding it means that we live it, because we can't understand it unless we're living it and get the experience of how it operates, it will prove the infallibility of divine metaphysics. It will be demonstrated. The healing will come forth. And in fact, the last 101 pages in the textbook is exactly that. It is individuals who gained enough understanding by reading the textbook, serious study of it, not just a perusal, not just a light survey, but a serious study of it. No outside person involved, no Christian Science practitioner, just them reading, studying in depth the textbook and nothing else. I presume some of them also utilized the Bible, although I didn't notice that in any of the 468 testimonies that are in those 101 pages at the end of the textbook that are entitled Fruitage. They rely just on what they learned in the textbook, basically. And they state that. They didn't go to any kind of a medical doctor or any other individual in the medical profession in order to bring forth a healing. It was all done through spiritual means. It was all done through increasing the spiritual understanding of themselves. The spiritual understanding within their own consciousness. Now, why does the title say transformation, negative to positive, attraction or rejection? As was mentioned, Jesus asked at least a couple of them that he healed, do you have faith that you can be healed? He didn't want to be dealing with someone that was happy with their problem and didn't want to have it solved. For example, some people that are bedridden want to stay in bed because they feel they have control over the people that help them, and they want to be catered to. That's a very unchristian way to look at it, because there's nothing about the definitions of God that indicate that God is imperfect. On the other hand, Habakkuk tells us that God is of pure eyes and to behold evil. So he certainly couldn't be evil if he can't even see it. He can't see it because God is good. If he could see evil, God would be evil and good. But Habakkuk makes it very clear. His eyes are too pure to behold evil. Jesus had to protect his thought. He had to convert what the eyes were trying to trick him into believing to be true to the real truth about the individual. That the individual was an image and likeness of God, as it states in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. And he also pointed out that they had to let the truth come into their consciousness. If they weren't interested in doing that, they couldn't be healed. Jesus said, "I have more things to say, but you're not ready to hear it." Mary Baker Eddy said the same thing. The very same thing. And she was correct. The people were not ready to hear it. They didn't even follow what she taught, what they had an opportunity to learn. They would have gained a whole lot more and a lot less time if they had been faithful to Jesus. But they weren't. They betrayed him. 11 out of 12 disciples betrayed Jesus. I don't think a single one attended his trial. Do you live in a lovely home? Maybe even in an exclusive area? Do you drive one of the top line of cars? Or maybe you have a limousine and you're driven. Let's say you have a life of ease. You have plenty of assets, including liquidity, which means cash, to buy anything you desire and do anything you want to with the 1,440 minutes every 24 hours. You're living like a king. And you like it. Very appealing to you. Do what you want, whenever you want, as long as you want, with whom you want, for whatever reason you want. What happens when you pass on? You start at zero. Zero. You can't take anything with you, because everything that you have is what you have taken. You haven't given anything to anyone else. You're fat and happy, living a life with matter surrounding you, not spirit, matter. You would be a very poor prospect for anyone who was willing to share what they knew about how to improve your life, becoming more spiritual, and cultivating a life of giving, because you were very happy in your position until the moment you pass on and you are shockingly awakened to the fact that everything has to be left behind. A Pharisee asked Jesus, "Good master," and he was wealthy. I guess he got a piece of the action from his tax collecting for the king, and he wanted to keep it. He apparently had all he needed, all he wanted, but he wanted to make sure he could keep it. So he went to Jesus and he said, "Good master, how can I obtain eternal life?" He was probably thinking, And by the way, I want to take everything with me I have. I want it to be all around me all the time. He doesn't say that, but that's probably what his what his thinking was. And what did Jesus say? First of all, he addressed the grammar. He threw in the trash can the word good. The guy said, good master. The adjective, good, as opposed to evil. Jesus said, why call thou me good? There is only one good, and that is God. So Jesus refuted the fact that he was good. He affirmed the fact that God is the only one that is good. And then he told him how to obtain eternal life. Jesus said, sell all that thou hast, and give it to the poor, and then come and follow me. Well, I guess the fellow was used to buying whatever he needed, and he thought he could buy eternal life. He was very disappointed. He wasn't about to give up anything for anyone else. He wasn't interested in cultivating a life of giving. He wanted a life of consumption. How does the saying go? He wanted his cake and eat it too. Do we want to eat our cake and still have it left over? Well, we can do it if our cake is composed of spirit. And we can share it with everyone and not lose any of it, because it's not ours to begin with. And the way we share it is by reflecting it. And it comes from a source that is infinite. And you know what the source is. The definition of God on page 465 tells us what the source is. And it tells us again on page 587 twice. On 465, it says, God, incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. What does that leave out? We've got the four explanatory adjectives that apply to all seven of them. The first one is incorporeal. Most Christians think that Jesus is God. But what does Jesus say? A big N-O. He says, that's not me. There's only one, and that's God. He's the only one that's good. And on page 587 in the glossary, it basically confirms the same fact. It says, God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. Basically, it says the same thing as in chapter 14 on page 465, the first one that I read or recited, and that is that anything mental is God, because that's mind. Any substance that is real is composed of spirit, and it's flawless. Because it's flawless, it's transparent. Because it's transparent and flawless, it is reflective. And since we're the image and likeness of God, we have the ability to reflect spirit throughout all humanity. We can touch every receptive heart by just making a statement that the only substance that exists is spirit. And that is God. And that's reflected out into all the world. Everyone knows it. Everyone accepts it. And soul is how we identify things. It's our faculties. Seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste. If we're going to dwell in material concepts, then we're going to be identifying things only as they relate to matter. So they're very temporary. They're temporal, not eternal. And the next quality is principle. Principle is balance, harmony, structure. And you throw a system in there which comes from mind, and you've got a system that operates within the structure. And the next one in line is life. That is living the qualities of God. Every one of them. Truth. Staying on track. And the sixth, being truth, leads to the seventh, which is love. And love is nurturing. To bring to fulfillment every single thing that is true about God's idea that is named you and me and everyone else. We all have our unique identity, but our identities are all totally in compliance with the laws of God. Because the only real source is God. And we are God's manifestation. Suppose through an earnest effort to learn about God, and we get so involved in it, and it sounds so good that we can control our lives and not be dependent upon any individual for our well-being, but we have a direct connection with God, and we understand that it is a direct connection, and that everyone has the opportunity to have the same direct connection. And as a result, we are attracted to learning more and more about it. Getting deeper and deeper. So no matter what comes up in our experience, we can solve it. And in most cases, it doesn't even come up to be solved because we're going to protect our thought so that it can't penetrate into consciousness in the beginning. It can't get anywhere because we've got this huge filter out there in front of our consciousness that says, nope, you don't qualify. When a good idea comes by, an angel message, oh, come on in. The door is wide open. One of the most popular images of Jesus is him standing in a white robe knocking at a door. Are we going to open our consciousness as it asks us to do in Genesis verse 26? And what's knocking on the door? Mary Baker Eddy, in chapter 15, which is on the chapter of Genesis, and Genesis, of course, means beginning, she explains that life, truth, and love in verse 26 refers to us. Let us make man in our image and likeness. Are we reflecting the spiritual life, the spiritual truth, and the spiritual love? Or are we mulling around in that huge can of Pandora's box called matter and material sense, trickery, deception, deceit, decoys? And it's real easy to know. All we have to do is look at the results of our life. Are we living a life of independence, or are we dependent on other people for our well-being? Are we dependent on someone telling us how great we are? Are we dependent upon compliments? Or do we really know who we are because we are getting a better and better understanding of what God is? And the only way we can find out who we are is by finding out who God is and realizing the connection is direct. No one in between, no filter, no media, no one to trick us, like the example given about the speaker that made up a story of lies, gave it to the media. They published it in an effort to take down the character of the individual. Mary Baker Eddy was disparaged, people trying to take down her character constantly. And they used the media to lie about her. What did she do about it? She didn't let a single article go by without stating the truth. She destroyed the error by stating the truth. When they said that she's prayerless, she put in an article that said, "I pray 3 times a day. I face toward Jerusalem." Once we begin to realize that no matter what kind of a problem we're facing, we have the truth that if we yield to it and deny the evil, that it has any power, we don't ignore it. We have to refute it vividly. Don't argue with it. Know why you're saying it and say what Frederick L. Rosen recommends. He said, make it very short and sweet. There is no, and then he states what the problem is. As we gain more confidence, as did the 86 people that are mentioned in chapter 18, entitled Fruitage, and there's 101 pages, the last chapter in the textbook, then we will cultivate a hunger for more truth, a higher understanding, going forward based on what Mary Baker Eddy says about progress, where she says infinite progression is concrete being. And we want to be on that path of concrete being. We want to have continuous progress. But we're not going to try to get it in one day. Isaiah tells us precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line. Here a little, there a little. That's such an important quotation that Mary Baker Eddy has that as an introductory quote to chapter 14, and chapter 14 is a summary of the previous 13 chapters. And that's the end of the textbook of the first part, which is entitled Science and Health. And the second part, beginning with chapter 15, which is Genesis, the Apocalypse, or Revelation, which is chapter 16, the glossary, which is chapter 17, and then the chapter on fruitage, which is 18. That is called Key to the Scriptures, those four chapters. The first part being called Science and Health. And that's why the title says Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. Why do you think the Jews wanted to kill Jesus, crucify him, murder him? Because he said that in the resurrection, now think about what the resurrection is. The resurrection was his final phase where he had proven that there is no life, truth, and intelligence in matter, and he was rising above the whole idea that there was a material world that was full of matter, and that it was full of individuals that were made of matter. John asked Jesus, is there such thing as a material man? The answer? No. And then John asked Jesus, is there such thing as a material world? Jesus said, most people believe there is, but there is not. We have the full conversation on our website. Jesus stated it, and he could have stated a lot more, but people were not ready to receive it. And the Jews crucified him because they thought that they would not have any civilization. They're forgetting that it says in the resurrection. In other words, after your thought, your consciousness has already risen above the stage of where it is that believes that everything is made up of matter. It's not until you understand that it's made up of spirit that you no longer give or are given in marriage, which is a belief of matter, and a belief that the male and the female gets together and produces another child. Made up of what? Matter. If you have a vision problem, Christian Science doesn't say to throw your glasses away. It says continue to use them until you naturally do not even pick them up to put them on because you have been healed of the vision problem. That's when we give up the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. When it is natural to do so because of our spiritual understanding. And remember, Isaiah tells us just a little bit here and a little bit there. Mary Baker Eddy brings that to our attention as the introduction to the summary of the first 13 chapters. Mary Baker Eddy begins the textbook with three very interesting quotes. And this is right after the title pages and before the preface and before the table of contents. The first one is from Jesus. And anyone that's a Christian Scientist or anyone that's attended a Christian Science church, they will usually find this printed on the wall as a quotation from the Bible. It says, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Free of what? Free of anything that's not truth. Anything that is unlike God. Anything that is a decoy or deceit. You can get rid of it all by seeking the truth. And what is the second quote? Anyone that's done any reading has heard of Shakespeare. The second quote is from him. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Our thinking determines how we're going to evaluate anything we see. And our ears are going to evaluate anything we hear. And soul will evaluate anything that has to do with seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling in order to identify something. Principle takes care of the structure, making sure we have harmony and balance. Understanding the system gives us a formula that we can utilize to solve any problem. We have to understand mathematics to solve a mathematical problem. If we believe that our real substance is spirit, We need to understand the system of divine metaphysics to solve any problem about our existence, our body, inside and out. There's a paragraph in the presentation on effective healing. It is a quotation from Mary Baker Eddy. And it essentially says, and we have it there that you can read the full text. It essentially says that science is practical, as is proven by anyone who seeks it earnestly. And anyone who does, they find that everything about their life is transformed into something better than they ever had. Everything. Every single thing in their life operates at a higher level, a greater degree of satisfaction, a more efficient use of time, a structure so that you don't get off track. The problem with time is that if we don't use it, it disappears, never to be repeated. Just like the Bible says about truth, there's nothing new under the sun. Does it take time to be healed of an element? In addition to Frederick L. Rawson, who's already been referred to, another gentleman by the name of Joel Goldsmith, and another one by the name of Wentworth Winslow, had 15-minute appointments all day long. 15 minutes, they're in and out. Healed. No matter what it was healed. There wasn't much time to say anything in that short period. But enough was said of the right thing so that the individuals were receptive and they were healed and they left very happy. The title to this prayer treatment again is Transformation. Negative to positive, attraction or rejection. Are we going to be attracted to replacing the negative with positive? If we're going to be attracted to doing that, then we will be able to accomplish it. The Mary Baker Eddy Institute classifies every individual as either a genius or not a genius. In fact, it's not really the Mary Baker Institute that classifies individuals. It's the individual themselves that classify themselves. Because if they choose a worthwhile project, plan it out, go through the steps, step by step, never give up, never give in, never quit. If you follow those steps and those characteristics, you are going to be putting yourself in the top very few decimal percentages, and you will be a genius. Out of 100 people, less than one will do it. If you have 1,000 people, less than one will do it. You'd probably have to have 10,000 people before you get to the point that there's one in the group that would do it. You see, people have been dumbed down so much that many have lost their incentive because they don't think anything will ever be any better. It's very sad. No one has to be in that group of failure. Everyone has the same opportunity. The Mary Baker Eddy Institute knows of someone that was born with a claim that said that they couldn't learn, they couldn't remember, they had a poor concept of balance, They'd be limited all their life. Never could be considered normal. They even had a different appearance because of the bone structure that is given as a claim on those that have that label put on them by the medical profession. And that happened to be a Christian Science family. They were young, in their 20s. One of them was exposed only to Christian Science since a child. The other one knew nothing about it except through what they've learned from being with the husband. They even had a brother that was a preacher. But instead of following the brother, they followed the husband. So the wife was in the hospital, expecting the baby to be born any moment. And when it was born, the medical doctor that was in charge of the case came down to the reception area and told the husband what I just related to you. This child has this disease, or whatever it's called, and they have all these problems. While the doctor was talking to him, the husband was mentally denying every single thing he was saying. Every single thing. Because he was in a family of four children, three sisters and himself, and all four of them had perfect attendance in a 12-year school. And that school had never had a single person that had perfect attendance for all 12 years. And in this case, the whole family did. They never missed a day in 12 years. Three girls and one boy. Never a day. And they were given an exemption so that they didn't have to attend any classes that was talking about the body, trying to teach the people about the body and the limitations of body and so forth. So they never had any exposure to anything except God. The mother and father never missed a day. The mother was a mother at home raising the children, and the father was in business, and it was a high dangerous business, high danger. Never had an accident, never missed a day of work. He loved doing what he was doing. The mother was the most loving person you would ever meet. They all studied every day. So the husband, even being young in his 20s, was basically saying to himself, none of this is true. He didn't tell the doctor that because they'd probably thrown him out of there. He said, none of this is true. So as soon as he got out of there, he called a local Christian Science practitioner, and he said, what should I do? He said, record down everything they tell you. And after they've done that for 2 days, call me. And the husband said, well, isn't that making a reality out of it? He said, just do it. I'll tell you why after the second day. So he called the practitioner after the second day, and the practitioner said, do you notice anything strange about what they're telling you today versus yesterday? Are they telling him the same thing, or what's going on? He said, yeah. The husband said, yeah, it's very strange. What they told me yesterday and what they're telling me today is almost the opposite. They act like they never told me what they said the day before. He said, yeah, you know why? I said, no. He said, because the medical profession is not a science. It is based on opinion. You will find that if somebody goes to a doctor and they tell them something bad, that frequently the guy will say, or the woman or whoever, will say, well, I'm going to go get another opinion. He doesn't say, I'm going to find out the facts from somebody else. This guy's telling me a lie. He just says, I'm going to get another opinion. And that's exactly what the medical profession is. It is opinion. So, it wasn't long before what the husband was involved in there. He finished his assignment there, and they moved to another part of the country. And he went to a practitioner there, and he told the practitioner what they told him. He said, "I know they're not telling me the truth, because first of all, I was raised the opposite of that, thinking about limitation and all this kind of stuff." And he said they never said the same thing twice. They were always changing it, like they didn't know what they were doing. She says, "Forget all about that." She says, "Teach the child how to read." I don't know, I think the child was 3-4 years old. "Teach the child how to read." They said, "When should we start?" She said, "Now. Right now. Today." Not only did they teach the child how to read, but they bought her a set of classic books for children, and she loved reading them. I think there was 25 or 30 books in that library of classic books. It was the real classics, but it was in language that would be for a young child. They said it wasn't supposed to have balance, so they taught her acrobatics. She did great cartwheels. Loved it. When they would go to a carnival or a fair, the more action there was, the better the child liked it. Didn't have any problem with losing balance in the most dangerous rides. Dangerous from a physical standpoint. They taught her how to swim. She swam like a fish. How to ice skate. She loved it. Ride a bicycle. She loved it. As the progress was being made, and they taught her, you know, everybody read the Christian Science every day. And as progress was being made, the formation of the bones in the head changed. And she became totally natural looking. When they would go to the grocery store, she could stand in the line and she'd start talking to the people in front of them or behind them. Had a great time. She could carry a conversation on with anyone. When they would go to church on Wednesday evening, in the Christian Science Church, they use Wednesday evening for a special meeting where people, after listening to a reading, they can stand up and give a testimony. The child would stand up and give a total extemporaneous testimony. One of them was utilizing that scientific statement of being that was referred to in this prayer treatment. And the child substituted the word, just like I mentioned. Instead of "there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter," she'd put the name of the problem that she had all the way through. And where it said "man," she'd say "me." She said, I'm God's image and likeness. And I'm not going to give up on it. And she was healed. Her testimony was a healing. We didn't even know she had a problem. They taught her how to play the piano. They had a piano teacher. 2 hours a day, every day. 7 days a week. In 3 years, the child could play any hymn in the hymn book up to 3 flats and 3 sharps. The whole hymn book. She was able to play something like 400 different hymns. We cannot listen to evil. We have to address it and say, no, it is not real. It's not real for me or for anyone else. Not real for my daughter, our daughter. Because it didn't come from God. It's not God-like. Mary Beck Reddy conducted a metaphysical college, the only one ever licensed in the United States, a metaphysical college. She could award PhD degrees, or she called them CSD, Christian Doctorate of Christian Science, CSD degrees. She could give certifications at any level she wanted based on their qualifications. In her final class, she invited everybody there before anyone could just pay the tuition and enter a class. But her final class, she restricted to only ones that she invited individually. And they were her most advanced students, of course. And she promised them if they could meet the requirements of the class, they would all get a CSD degree, Doctorate of Christian Science. And they did. The third day, and this wasn't new to them, but on the third day, she assigned them to go out and perform a healing and come back and report it the next morning when the class resumed. Every single one came back with a healing. Every single one. The only limitation we have is in our own thinking. If we don't have it in our own thinking, we do not experience it. Remember what Shakespeare said in the second quote, "There's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Oh, and I didn't give you the third quote. The third quote is by Mary Baker Eddy at the beginning of the textbook. And it says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." What do you think she means? "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer." She gave us the definition of God and described God as being incorporeal. God doesn't have any ears. He doesn't have anything that looks like a man. He's not a man. God is spirit. God is not human. God is divinity itself. Everything that is perfect, that's God. No flaws of any kind. And no, God wasn't created by a man and a woman getting together and producing matter, and it was in a woman's womb for 9 months and then came out like a baby. Not a chance. And then spent 30 years between childhood and learning how to be a carpenter. Are you kidding me? People don't think. If you're not going to think, you can't be a Christian Scientist, because Christian Science requires one to think. It's not a nice thing to do. It is a requirement. You just can't be a Christian Scientist and be sovereign and yet never learn how to think. Ben Franklin had a very simple way to think. He would draw a T-chart, a horizontal line across the top of a piece of paper, and write down the middle of it a vertical line. And everything that would be a positive, if he made the decision to say, "Yes, I'm going to do it," he would list on the left. And everything that would be a negative, he would list that on the right. And then he would view it carefully to come up with what you might call a net. The difference between what's on the left and the right. And that would be the net change, if you would do it. And if it wasn't a strong yes, you wouldn't do it. And we can get fancy with it. We can assign values to the individual things. Some are lesser important than others. If it's really important, then you assign a high value to it. And you add up the numbers. What do the numbers tell you? You see, to learn how to think, it means to learn how to present facts in an organized fashion and let the facts make the decision. That's what thinking is. It's comparing in an organized structure so that it becomes obvious the right thing to do. That's all thinking is. So simple, and yet they don't even teach it in school. To my knowledge, they never did. The closest they came in any class I ever took was a class on logic, doing syllogisms. I loved it. I got an A in it. It was natural to me to think that way, because you're taught that in Christian Science. You're taught to think in a systematic, logical fashion. You're taught to utilize the structure. One other point that is important to make is that the system of divine metaphysics is a grand matrix. And what do I mean by matrix? It's like a spreadsheet. It has columns and rows. And if you put mind in the first column on the left, and the one to the right of it, spirit, and go right down through the seven, you know, third would be soul, and then principle, and then life, then truth, then love. And go down the left side the same way. The top would be mind, below that would be spirit, and then soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And think about, okay, how does mind apply to spirit? In fact, we can say, how does mind apply to itself? Well, intelligence is a quality of mind. Faculties is a quality of mind. Creative ability, functionality, they're all qualities of mind. Performance, power, that's all qualities of mind. So how does mind relate to itself? Well, think about intelligence, or wisdom, or knowing. Those are all part of omniscience. And everything about God is omni, meaning the one, only, and all. Everything is omni, one, only, and all. There is no other. There's no competition, there's no opposition to God. So, how does mind interact with itself? Well, think about intelligence. And think about faculties. A faculty is anything. You know, your arm, fingers, walking, whatever. Any function. If we are not intelligent in the way we use our capacity, is that intelligence or ignorance? That's ignorance. So that's not mind interacting with mind. How about substance? Spirit is the only substance. Do we have to be intelligent in order to be able to determine whether or not the substance is spirit or matter? Matter is the opposite of spirit. Of course. How about soul? Soul is spiritual sense. That's our seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. Do we have to be intelligent in order to make sure the way we identify something is correct and accurate? And if the Bible tells us that the only substance is spirit, which of course is the same thing Mary Baker Eddy says, then we have to make sure that if we really want to identify something that is going to be a correct identification, then we have to be looking at the spiritual nature of seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and tasting. If we don't, then we're not using intelligence, we're using ignorance. How about principle and structure? Do we need to be intelligent to have a proper structure for principle? How about life? Do we have to be intelligent in the way we live our life? Or can we be blind, deaf, and dumb, and ignorant? Of course we need to be intelligent. How about truth? Do we have to be intelligent in order to know the difference between truth and error, a mistake and what's not a mistake? Truth also represents motive. Do we have to have an intelligent motive for anything that we do? Of course. How about love? Do we have to be intelligent in the way we conduct ourselves with love? If we're dealing with a sensuous situation, is that really true love or emotional love? It's emotional love. It's not spiritual love. Spiritual love lasts forever. Emotional love is here and gone. It has no lasting value. And we do the same thing with every one of the terms. The founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute is Helen Wright and her husband, William. Helen was the primary one. She was the avid writer. In fact, she was a ghostwriter for one of the most popular individuals that put out a lot of books. She actually wrote the books. She finally decided, well, I'm doing a lot of work here. I might as well put it in my own name. So she broke away and stopped using someone else's name as a ghost, and she wrote things under her own name. The finest book she ever wrote, she was 100 years old, according to the Christian calendar. It's called Your Divinity Revealed. And chapter 4 is on mind, chapter 5 is on spirit, chapter 6 is on soul, and so forth. So chapters 4 through 10 are each of the 7 synonymous terms. And she also went through the entire textbook and underlined every place where the word is capitalized, which means that Mary Baker Eddy intended that to mean God. Whereas if it's not capitalized, that is a relative human view of the term. So capitalization is very important in understanding the Bible and science and health. And in the Bible, they're not very consistent in capitalizing it, but Mary Baker Eddy is. She goes, and you can be too. Just use a Strong's Concordance. That's an interlinear where they tell you what every word is, the derivation, whether it's past, present, or future tense, and the grammar, everything. An extremely valuable reference, the Strong's Concordance with the interlinear. So the system of Christian Science is a matrix where it is seen clearly that everything works together in one grand network. Mary Baker Eddy gave us many symbols about the system of divine metaphysics in the very first church that they built in Boston. The small one. I don't know, I think it holds maybe 500 people or so. And then they built, within 5 or 6 years after that, they built the big one that holds 5,000 people with 2 or 3 levels of balconies. The system is what we all need to study. Because if we understand that, we will be able to prove the infallibility, which means that we will be able to bring forth healing consistently. The final class that was referred to about where Mary Baker Eddy invited all the students that were top students, and those were the only ones that could attend the class, and she gave a CSD degree to everyone that completed the course. She gave them a very special set of 7 prayers, and she entitled them Diapason of Heaven. And if you look up the word diapason, you'll find it means compound concord, the opposite of disease, the opposite of sin or sickness or death. It's compound concord. No chaos. whatsoever. This treatment is entitled transformation, and it seems like that probably relates to the second term for God, which is spirit, more than any other one, although all of them are involved because it has the word attraction in there. And the only attraction is from mind, because that's the only power. But I believe spirit is as good as anyone, any of the seven terms to use to top this off and seal it with the prayer by Mary Baker Eddy that is entitled Diapason of Heaven with a Focus on Spirit. And stay tuned, because if there's any additional short thought, I will say it after the prayer. Here is Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy with a Focus on Spirit. We must declare often that spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is spirit. Individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. Amen. The thought just occurred to me that we didn't really finish about the third quote from Mary Baker Eddy at the beginning of the textbook, where it says, Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. We mentioned that God is incorporeal, and therefore he doesn't have ears. So what could it mean where she says, Oh, God has heard my prayer? Do you think it could possibly mean that since the laws of the universe are the laws of God, that if we abide by those laws, then we have the benefit of them? It's not that a human with a set of ears is hearing what we say. It's a matter that the laws represent a principle that if abided by, we will benefit from the power that is behind that principle. It may show up in many different ways. But the point is that if we abide by the laws of the universe, that we will gain the benefit from doing so. Mary Baker Eddy was attacked continuously, just like Jesus. She was crucified mentally. Jesus was crucified physically. We have some materials on that. You may be interested in reading about it. So, to counteract the attacks by everyone, she did a self-examination prayer every hour of the day, just like clockwork. She doesn't say how long she invested of her time in those, but she did say she did it every waking hour. Every hour. How much time do we do self-examination? Don't worry about doing an examination of someone else. Let them take care of their own consciousness. Our business is to take care of our own. Mary Baker Eddy says that will keep us very busy. It is Monday, August 3, 2026, at 16:41 on the 24-hour clock. And the topic to this prayer treatment, which has been entirely extemporaneous, is transformation, negative to positive, attraction or rejection. Thank you for listening. The end.